Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, January 9th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 45 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for this Thursday edition of the show. One guest joins me for the duration of the program. That is professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. We'll talk FCS National Championship Game, FBS College Football Playoff National Championship Game, and the four NFL playoff games here for this weekend. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. We'll have all kinds of coverage of Clemson and LSU. I wrote up my preview earlier in the week or late last week. I don't even know when I did it, but it's been up for a while over there. We'll do some prop stuff for the game, for each team, maybe some of the novelty props as well in written form over at the website. We'll talk a little bit about them here on today's show as well. But Danny Vorges' updated model projections and final scores for the divisional round in the NFL playoffs posted over at the website. Sony Open preview from James Mazzola. We've got daily NHL from Parker Michaels. Ongoing NBA and college basketball stuff. Plenty of things going on over at the website. Make sure you check them all out. And of course, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest on the program here today, and that is professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
That's going well. How are you doing on this fine Thursday?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always here. And I got to say, it's probably a little bit bittersweet for you here that there's only two college football games left for the season.
You would think I'd feel that way, but you know, it wasn't necessarily a great season for old BP. So, but I say, you know, almost good riddance to 2019. I know that you shouldn't have some bitterness towards that, but I mean, I got a lot of self-reflection, self-scouting to do heading into 2020 that it's probably time that I'm okay to close the book. Although I'll say this, this normally doesn't happen, even with two games left. I got two relatively strong opinions on the upcoming two games, and that's usually not the case when you're down to the final games and usually the best teams left.
Well, let's take a look here at these two games, and we start on the FCS side. James Madison, North Dakota State game, 801-802, noon Eastern kickoff on Saturday here. James Madison favored across most of the market. There are some places that are kind of dealing pick 'em, a couple places dealing one and a half with extra juice. In fact, as you kind of look around here, this spread is sort of all over the place. Total has come down a bit from 51.5 to 49.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, these two teams are basically the Alabama and Clemson of the FCS the last three, 4 years. They're the two best programs, and easily this year, the two best teams. Between the two of them, there's only been one loss, and it was James Madison in an opener against West Virginia where they really outplayed West Virginia. Three turnovers did them in. So that's the only loss between these two teams combined this season. They've clearly been far superior even in the playoffs so far. James Madison really hasn't had a close game yet, although North Dakota State a few games ago, you know, had a nip-and-tuck type of game against Illinois State. You know, two teams that are easily 1-2 in any sort of power rating you want to look at heading into it. I'm going to go with the under here and hear me out for several different reasons. Number one, for me, weather concerns. There's a really nasty weather front coming through Frisco, Texas. This is where the game is played at. It's a neutral site game, although North Dakota State will have the fan advantage there. They've been known to travel very well down to Texas. So weather for the game kickoff, wind is going to be right around 20 miles per hour. To me, that's like almost an auto under bet there. Number two reason why I like the under here. It's unlike any other game that these teams have played all year. And here's why. 3 weeks off from the time these two teams last played. Neither team's dealt with that all season long. So you played a bunch of regular season games in a row. You played three straight playoff games, and now you had 3 weeks in between times. So I think the offensive timing could be a little off, especially early in the game. So that's reason number two. I like the under. Third and final, just look at how the game flow goes when these two teams not only play each other in the past when it comes to playoff meetings. I think the two teams have averaged 37 total points per game their last two playoff meetings. But even like a team like James Madison this year, if you look at their three best teams that they faced this year and how the game flow goes, average scores like James Madison 24-9. So they're not afraid to, you know, to slow the game down, rely on their defense. Speaking of defenses, the top two defenses in the FCS. Adam, you add it all up, brother. Under for me. The problem is, it's not like I can get five G's down. The one book where I found 51 yesterday after I handicapped it allowed me to bet $500, and then they moved it a point and a half after I bet it.
Yeah, that is definitely a thing here with the FCS market. At least this is one where, you know, some people may kind of be invested in this one, but of course you do have NFL playoff games here on Saturday that people will probably be a little bit more invested in.
You think?
You mentioned, you know, yeah, maybe a little bit. You mentioned that there's some weather considerations here with some wind and, of course, there's some snow going through Texas as well with this current weather system. Does that impact one team more than the other to the point where maybe it kind of gives you a position on the side?
Great question. I mean, both teams are more run-oriented. North Dakota State has a fine young quarterback. I think there's, you know, he hasn't thrown an interception yet this year, but they've kind of protected him a little bit so far, at least in what, the couple games I've seen in the playoffs for North Dakota State. No, I don't think it does. Although I will say this, James Madison has played in a little bit of weather. You would think North Dakota State's played in a bunch of weather games this year, but obviously remember they play in the Fargo Dome. So James Madison just recently played in a weather type of game in their playoffs. So maybe, I mean, if there is some lingering, you know, rain, wind, you know, obviously wind will be consistent throughout it. But if there's any like drizzle or sleet or whatever mixed precipitation, I think it actually might be advantage James Madison just because they played a recent game in it.
Well, and again, looking at the under here, as you said, North Dakota State protecting their quarterback a lot in a game of this magnitude, they're probably not going to put it in his hands. So again, you're going to have likely a running clock for most of this game. It's like the under, a very good position to take there, based on the handicap that you just gave us. The big one, Monday, Clemson, LSU, 283-284, LSU 5.5, pretty much market-wide still. There's a stray 5, there's a stray 6. It all depends on if you shop around here a little bit. Total of 69.5 for this one. We talked a little bit about this game last week. We kind of gave a Cliff Notes bullet point handicap of it. What are you looking at here as we're now just a few days away from the game?
Well, I'll say this. I mean, if you want to, you know, visit us here in the great city of Las Vegas, we're paying at 6 at a lot of places here in town. So 5.5 offshore at most places, although there's a few outliers, but 6 at the square books here in Vegas, multiple books here painting 6. They can't get enough of LSU here. I rarely have a significant position in the national championship game outside of maybe some props. I got one here, and it's actually just in my power ratings looking at it prior to the semifinals. So, you know, we talked a little bit about this last week. For those that didn't listen, I mean, this game, this exact matchup was offered. You could have bet this Clemson LSU theoretical matchup at multiple books prior to the semifinal games. I saw one book have Clemson a 1-point favorite. I saw another have LSU 1. I had the game power rated to pick them, giving LSU 2.5 points. A home field advantage, which, I mean, is about as much as I go when it comes to home field advantage for a quote-unquote neutral site. I downgraded Clemson a point after the Buckeye game, even though they won and covered it. Upgraded LSU 2 points for that destruction of Oklahoma. Maybe give LSU another half point. They're getting Michael Divinity back on defense. I mean, that's 3.5. If you subscribe to my newsletter, I go through every single position and other factors like obviously turf in the crowd, matchups and tangibles, strength of schedule and whatnot. And I got LSU by 3.5 there. I can't get it to 6, Adam. And to me, it looks like a clear overreaction to what we just saw last. And the public loves to bet offense. Well, they saw a lot of offense with Joe Burrow. They're kind of like the football sexy type of team. And I just think it's a clear overreaction to what we just saw last. And the reason why LSU's, you know, not laying 3.5, 4 here is, I mean, just because of an overreaction. So I'm going to take Clemson plus six, and I like it quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. And look, I mean, you and I are realists here, too. We fully understand that with this LSU offense, with the job that Joe Burrow's done, there is a chance. I don't know how great of a chance it is. There is a chance that LSU just goes out there, dominates this game, wins by 10 or 14 points, and it wouldn't surprise either one of us. But again, from a line value standpoint, it is very clearly on Clemson. You are paying the utmost premium to back LSU. I even had this game 3.5, Clemson minus 3.5, and a neutral going into the semifinals. With the home field, Clemson minus one would probably be my number there. I can't get it to six either. You know, and that's even with making some adjustments off of what we saw in the semifinals. And again, narrative drives so much at this time of the year, as we know. The narrative about the Clemson-Ohio State game, and I think that this is a pretty valid point overall, is that Ohio State lost. It's not that Clemson won. It's that Ohio State lost. They left all those points out there in the first half. Olave was open on that last play until he broke off the route, thinking that Fields was scrambling. I don't know if he makes the catch. I don't know if Fields puts it where he needs to. But you look at the all 22, that throw was there. So that's even more fuel to that narrative of, well, Ohio State lost. Clemson didn't win the game. Ohio State lost the game. Everything changed when Sean Wade went out. Another mark against Clemson. And all this is doing, and God, I hate this, but it's fueling everything that Dabo keeps saying about his team. We're disrespected. We're underappreciated. We're underrated. This line suggests that they are, and at this point in time, in the betting context, I agree with it.
Yeah, my one-point downgrade of Clemson from the Ohio State game is I basically treated like Clemson did lose the game. That's why I downgraded them a point, even though they won the game and covered it. So I treated it like that they probably should have lost that game. But I just, Adam, I've never seen a defending national champ, at least in a very high-profile game. And if you look at the public betting percentages, it's like 3-1 LSU here. A team that's won 29 consecutive games in a row. Now, I mean, if they win this one, it'll be the longest winning streak we've seen from any team since those Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart teams that won 34 in a row. And the fact that here's another, I mean, you talk about Clemson being disrespected. I would say the market has. I mean, Clemson's two field goals away from being 13-1 against the spread. And the two games they didn't cover besides the obvious one, which everyone wants to talk about, the North Carolina game. But they failed to cover by about a field goal against Wofford, an FCS team, when they're laying 48. And then, of course, you know, back to week two, Texas A&M was scored on fourth down with 5 seconds left to get the back door. I mean, that's it. The North Carolina game and those two games I just mentioned are the only three games Clemson hasn't covered this year. They easily could be 13-1 against the number. I mean, I don't get it, especially when you look at Dabo Swinney's track record in the postseason, where he's 10-1 against the number since 2012, average cover by two touchdowns a game. I get it. LSU's been very, impressive, especially the last three games against A&M, Georgia, and Oklahoma. But I can't get it this far, Adam, to 6 points. Just looks like a clear overreaction to me. And really, last time I thought we saw it in the playoffs is, you know, Oregon just demolished the defending national champ Florida State. This was the first year of the playoffs in 2014. And even though Ohio State beat Alabama, the Oregon's laying, you know, more a touchdown or more against the Buckeyes. I couldn't understand that line, and I don't understand this one. I'll throw this at you, and I think sometimes you can use this in your back pocket. When you don't understand a line or you think you're off a little bit, use the rule of two. If this line was LSU minus four, would that still make sense if it was 2 points, away from where it's at now? No, I think it'd be a fair number if it was LSU minus 3.5, minus four. But if you increased it 2 points, the line, LSU minus 7.5, minus eight, I mean, who would you be betting then? I mean, I'd have to think most people would be betting Clemson at that point.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. I've never heard of that. And maybe that's something that we'll have to dive in with a little bit more once we've got, you know, a larger set of games into the next regular season. But something else I want to mention here, you know, and again, another mark against Clemson in the court of public opinion. And I mean, this one's, you know, a little bit more realistic. They did not play a good schedule. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. LSU did play a very good schedule here over the course of the season. So that is fueling the narrative. But as you just said, Clemson's a couple field goals away from being 13-1 against the number, laying enormous numbers in almost all of their games. Their lowest favorite role in the regular season, 15.5, and they still crushed it from an ATS standpoint in terms of their record. So this is a team, you talk about performing to expectation, you talk about performing to, you know, what their spread is supposed to be. It's not Clemson's fault they didn't play anybody, but when they did play games, they did what they were supposed to do for the most part.
I mean, and that strength of schedule is factored into my power rating, so it's not like I don't incorporate it. I mean, I gave LSU, you know, a couple extra points for that, and I still can't get it to 6. And I'll say this, if you had question marks about Clemson's strength of schedule, that certainly showed early in the Ohio State game. To me, it looked like, wow, Clemson hadn't seen that kind of team speed and physicality early on, and it was kind of a shell shock to them. But I would say this, Adam, they certainly responded well after they were punched in the mouth a few times for the first time this season. I mean, for a team that's really hadn't been involved in too many close games, I mean, basically won the North Carolina game all season long, that to find themselves down 16-0 in an all-everything game against what I perceive to be one of the best Big Ten teams I've seen probably in the last 10, 15, 20 years, for them to still come back. And I thought, you know, you could say Ohio State easily could have won that game, but I thought last 35, 40 minutes of the game, I mean, I didn't see much difference between the two teams. In fact, I can make a case after the first 20 minutes, Clemson was the better team. When they needed to score, they scored. And they shut down Ohio State for a majority of that second half until the last couple of drives. So, I mean, if you had concerns about Clemson, how would they react to a team? We saw it, down 16-0. They reacted about as well as you could.
Yeah, and you know, that was a big point that I made going into the Fiesta Bowl was Clemson and Ohio State only play this level of talent against each other in practice. I mean, Ohio State is in a pretty decent Big Ten, but nobody in the Big Ten is close to Ohio State athletically. So this game against Clemson was a real legitimate test for both teams. And for Clemson, it took them a little bit more time to get up to speed in that game, and ultimately they did, and ultimately they did advance. So with that in mind here, as we transition to looking at some of the prop betting markets that are going to be out there, we don't have a lot of exact numbers. I know you mentioned Westgate's got some of their prop catalog open out there in Las Vegas. I'm not seeing much in the offshore market that I can reference here at this point in time. But when we talk about game flow, when we talk about expectation, when we talk about matchups, when some of these lines do actually start to pop, are there some matchups or some game flow things you're going to look to take advantage of from a prop standpoint?
It might seem obvious, particularly after, you know, Lawrence had such a good performance running the ball against the Buckeyes, but I would expect a little bit more of the same. The fact that, you know, for a majority of the season, you got to protect the guy like Trevor Lawrence, so you're not going to be willing Clemson to run him against a Boston College or a Wake Forest, but we certainly saw when the chips were down a little bit and you needed, you know, someone to make a play. I mean, they ran him 16 times, and he didn't have a single game this season, Trevor Lawrence, more than 11 rushes, and, you know, 11 rushes being the North Carolina game. So we got two data points, the two closest games of the season for Clemson, and you got Lawrence with 11 and 16 carries and averaging about 75 rushing yards. I want to get after that. Lawrence is rushing either attempts over or yards over for me, and it's twofold. If we've seen that, you know, a couple of teams that have had success against LSU, it's certainly been a mobile quarterback. You look at, you know, Rice Plumlee for Ole Miss, you know, having a lot of success running the football against LSU. You know, L. Ellinger's a type of guy that's very mobile for them. Maybe is probably is most similar to Lawrence as any other quarterback that LSU has faced. And, you know, Texas had a lot of success, you know, with 530 total yards in that one. So I'm going to go look the bet over on Lawrence rushing numbers.
Yeah, I like that one. And, you know, something I thought that Clemson really failed to do well against Ohio State, I thought they should have attacked the middle of the field. I thought they should have attacked Malik Harrison and Pete Werner and Tuff Borland, because, you know, they could have done that slant route thing. They could have sort of done, you know, like what Alabama and what even to a degree Ohio State sometimes likes to do, use the middle of the field. And they didn't do that. And that kind of surprised me opting to go one-on-one against Ohio State's corners. And to a degree, it's a big reason why Ohio State had so much success defensively early on in that game before Lawrence sort of softened some things up by running the football. I think that that may be a change here for Jeff Scott and the coaching staff. And I think they do that with Travis Etienne. I think Etienne is a guy that goes over his receiving yards in this game. Easy to say, having just done it against Ohio State, but you know, only had about 300 receiving yards over the course of the regular season. I think that's a change that they make here. I know that Grant Delpit's going to have to keep an eye on Etienne. Maybe he winds up providing some help over the top against some of these very good wide receivers, but the wide receivers weren't great in the semifinal for Clemson. Part of that because of Ohio State's corners, but part of it too because they hadn't faced anything like that from an opposition standpoint over the course of the season. I think Etienne's kind of your X factor here. I think he could run the ball a lot. I think he could be a factor in the receiving game. I kind of like Etienne to get a lot of touches here in this one, certainly more than the 13 that he had in the semifinal.
And it makes sense because I do think LSU's got the guys that can at least, you know, when you look at, you know, Derek Stingley and Grant Delpit, I think they have the guys that can possibly take away the T. Higgins and the Justin Rosses of the world at wide receiver. It makes sense that you'd feature, ETN coming out of the backfield a little bit more, similar to what, what we saw in the Ohio State game. So, and even against superior athletes, not superior to him, sort of say, but superior to the rest of college football, we saw ETN make a couple of athletic plays that, I mean, even boggled my mind against, you know, some great talent at Ohio State. I mean, he's still had a burst that even the Ohio States of the world just hadn't seen. So I hate to agree with you all the time. You know, I'm not afraid to disagree with you on stuff because we bet all the time on this segment, but I agree with you wholeheartedly there.
And I think too, it's kind of interesting here for Clemson. I mean, you look early on in that game and Chase Young did not have a very good game against Clemson. You know, I mean, there were some penalties that were missed. I understand that there are always penalties that are missed no matter the player. But early on in that game, they shied away from Chase Young's side. They were really only using half of the field over their first two or three possessions. Then they started to open it up. They started running more option to his side. They kind of got him moving a little bit. And then also realized that, hey, our tackles are doing a pretty good job on this guy. And that opened up the full complement of their offensive playbook. I think that is something that they can take full advantage of here in this game. And a guy like Etienne allows you to use the whole field, whether it's a swing pass, the middle of the field, running the football, something like that. I just think he's just a bigger factor in the game plan overall here. And not to mention, it's never a bad idea to run the football and keep it away from Joe Burrow as much as you can. So I really think Etienne, a focal point here for Clemson in this one. What about anything else from a player prop standpoint? You mentioned Lawrence rushing attempts and yards, something that you'll be looking at. Anything else that you're kind of considering maybe from the LSU side?
Yeah, you know, I haven't really dived in to see if, you know, one of their wide receivers can particularly have a bigger game. They're very deep there with Chase Jefferson, Marshall, and you know, Randy Moss's kid, Thaddeus Moss at tight end. You know, Edwards-Helaire for LSU, I'm going to read a little bit more to see how healthy he is. I think he can have some success. You mentioned him, possibility playing him a little bit over because of what you saw J.K. Dobbins, who obviously could have had even a bigger game against Clemson, but he was in and out of the lineup with that ankle issue. So, you know, Edwards-Helaire, very similar type of a player like J.K. Dobbins. So Edwards-Helaire numbers might actually be attractive. And honestly, it depends, Adam, as we're going through this, you know, how much is offered. I mean, I wish it would go as deep as like maybe the Super Bowl. I got an LSU a defensive player that I wouldn't mind playing over. It's their best pass rusher, Kalavon Chase, who was injured most of the season, missed a few games, and then was just less than 50%, or not 50%, less than 100% for a majority of the season. Only had two sacks the first nine games that he played. Last three games, he's got 4.5 sacks. So I'd be interested to see what his sack total is. I mean, if he got like a half or a one sack, maybe you go over a guy like that. Kalavon Chase for LSU. Just depends on how, you know, deep they want to go here in the prop market. Right now, I mean, Westgate, when I said, oh, they got some player props available. It's like, you know, 10, 12 props you can bet from. And it's obviously your quarterbacks and your running backs and a couple wide receivers.
Yeah, I like the Kalyvon Chase on one. I like that one a lot. I do tend to look for, you know, a lot of stuff on the defensive side, defensive sacks. I love to play over under tackles with a lot of different guys. And this is obviously the type of game where you can get a lot of tackles from the safeties, from the linebackers, virtually everyone in the back seven, because these are two very explosive offensive teams that are highly athletic. It's not going to be 3 yards in a cloud of dust from either one of these offenses most of the game. So you're going to get opportunities for guys like an Isaiah Simmons to make a lot of plays, a Grant Delpit to make a lot of plays. Jacob Phillips had over 100 tackles for LSU this year. You're going to get guys like Tanner Muse damn well may have saved that game for Clemson by running down J.K. Dobbins in the first half on one of his long runs. That was one of the times Ohio State came out with 3 in the red zone instead of 7. Tanner Muse could very well have saved that game with that play. So yep. You got a lot of guys in the back seven here that you could take a serious look at that are going to get a lot of reps, a lot of opportunities. And in particular, with LSU throwing the football with so many guys they can throw the football to, you know, who's on Justin Jefferson? Who does Clemson put on him? Who's on Ja'Marr Chase? What do they do with Thaddeus Moss? I mean, is that Tanner Muse's responsibility? Is that Kevon Wallace's responsibility? You know, these are things that you can kind of look at here once we actually get some lines out for these things. So game flow, matchups, all sorts of different stuff here. Field goal kicking is another example here. You know, you've got two teams that move the football up and down the field. Will they bog down in the red zone, or will they get done what they need to get done? Cade York missed 5 field goals for LSU. BT Potter missed 8 for Clemson.
Yeah.
So if you've got a situation where you think these teams are going to get bogged down in the red zone, you're going to get the field goal tries, but will they be made? That's a big question here. Again, this is like the Super Bowl where you've got all these props available to you. Even if you don't like side or total, you've got plenty of opportunities to get down on the game.
The question is, will these props be available for you? I mean, maybe a couple books come out with it, but yeah, I wouldn't mind. I love the field goal kicking aspect. More high pressure game, guys just haven't been relied upon too often to kick field goals here because you got two such high scoring efficient offenses, even in the red zone. That I wouldn't mind going over, you know, missed field goal type of thing. It just depends on how exotic they're willing to go here.
Yeah, I mean, like, longest field goal is one that I generally like to take a look at here. Cade York for LSU, 9 of 14 from 40 or longer. Potter for Clemson, 5 of 9 from 40 or longer. Only 3 of 6 from 30 to 39, too. So, you know, longest field goal doesn't look like Clemson's going to be too much of an option there, potentially.
Yep.
So, you know, again, a lot of different stuff you can take a look at. And hopefully all this stuff does come out here on Friday or Saturday, and hopefully we get some ample time to break these things down. Speaking of breaking things down, let's go over to the NFL playoff side here. We'll start on Saturday with the first game, 301-302. Minnesota-San Francisco, 7 painted across the offshore market with the 49ers a home favorite. 44 also painted across the market on the total. Brad Powers, what are you thinking about the first divisional round game here?
I'm a little conflicted. I kind of want to take Minnesota. Hear me out. I just think, number one, Mike Zimmer, head coach from Minnesota, I think he's the most underrated coach in the NFL. How do I know that? You're just blindly betting him against the spread since he started every single game since 2014, 64% against the spread. But yet, you know, as far as the betting public goes, you just don't hear about Mike Zimmer being one of the best coaches in the NFL. You hear among sharper bettors, but it certainly isn't enough, the fact that he's covered 64% and against non-division opponents where there's, you know, unfamiliarity. So there's not a lot of familiarity between the two teams. He does even better, 71% against the spread, against non-division opponents in his career. We're talking 43 winners, 18 losers, and 3 pushes, 70.5% for Zimmer. I just, you know, a lot of injury concerns that just came out yesterday for me, and that's why I'm kind of him-hawing here. You know, Thielen, you know, ankle injury yesterday in practice. You know, Diggs was already missing practice because he's ill. I mean, last week to me was the first time the Vikings had been healthy, it looked like, in a while. Thielen had more receiving yards than he had in the previous 5 games combined. Dalvin Cook looked healthy. mean, if you told me these guys are healthy, I'll take Minnesota plus 7. But after yesterday's news, after practice, I'm not, you know, willing to make a big bet here on the Vikings.
Yeah, I think that's the challenge is, you know, I mean, this the ceiling for this Vikings team is very, very high. They don't blitz a lot, so they're very good in their base defensive packages. And we kind of saw that play out last week with Drew Brees not really looking the part, not doing enough to go out there and win that football game. We also saw Kirk Cousins not play great by any means, but having Adam Thielen was a tremendous help for him. Now, one big difference is that we know about the 49ers and the edge pressure that they can get. The Saints get a fair amount of pressure, but they have to sell out a little bit more in order to do it. So how does that factor into the game for Kirk Cousins here? What does Dalvin Cook do after, you know, looking okay last week? He certainly didn't look explosive by any means. What does he do here against the 49ers? What do the Vikings do in terms of, you know, trying to get Kyle Rudolph free? Are they able to have success with that again? This is one where you have so many individual matchups that can dictate the handicap, and they're almost all on the Minnesota side. And that concerns me because I feel like a lot of things need to go right for Minnesota to be operating at an optimal level here. And right now, with the Thielen injury, with Diggs sick, with the bad spot, the quick turnaround, the short time to game plan,
yeah,
I think it's really tough for Minnesota here this week. I really do.
So you're on the San Fran side.
If I had to play the game, I think so. I think maybe it's something that shows up a little bit more in the total market, where I think the under is a pretty decent look here, because I just don't think Minnesota is particularly explosive in this matchup against San Francisco. Now, on the flip side, San Francisco, how much did the bye week help them? Because they were reeling defensively before that bye. Is that enough to fix everything?
I mean, they might get some guys. I mean, Quan Alexander, who's been out last half of the season, looks like he might be ready to go. That's what could be a big factor, but I think you hit on it. First, there's been quite the disparity with the 49ers. Start of the season, one of the best defenses, if not the best defense in the NFL. They allowed 11 points per game, which was first after the first seven games. Last nine games, they're allowing 26 points per game. You stack rank that, that's 24th in the league. So what's the real truth of the 49ers defense? First, 24th, probably the reality is somewhere in the middle, maybe a top 10 type of defense. I mean, the market's telling you that the under seems like the sharper play here, but I mean, statistically speaking, if we're going off of what the 49ers have been defensively the last 9 weeks of the season, the 44.5 doesn't make much sense to me.
Well, and this is also a 49ers team, and I mentioned this in the preview I wrote over at bangthebook.com. 7 takeaways in their last 8 games. You know, early in the season, their first 8 games, they had 20 takeaways. So that was a big thing that we saw kind of clip New England a little bit late in the year, where they weren't forcing turnovers. They made it tougher on their offense. We saw what happened to them. The difference is San Francisco's offense got better over the course of the season. Kyle Shanahan is brilliant. I will stand for that guy every time I possibly can. But the defense didn't force a lot of takeaways late in the year, and it hurt them, and they gave up a lot more points. So we'll see what happens here. If Cousins can avoid the bad turnover, this is, I think, pregame, this one's hard to take a shot at. Pre-flop, it's a difficult handicap. Maybe in-game, when you see how Minnesota comes out, if there's any hangover from last week, you see San Francisco shake off the rust. Maybe live betting is just made for this game.
Yeah, let me ask you this. How much does San Francisco's inexperience as far as playoffs go play into it? I mean, first time they've been in the playoffs in 6 years as a franchise. Kyle Shanahan has never been a head coach in the playoffs. Jimmy G's not been a starting quarterback in the playoffs before. Does that factor in at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to. It absolutely has to. I mean, especially because, you know, if you're Minnesota, I mean, you sell out against the run, right? You make Jimmy Garoppolo beat you.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
You have to. And not only that, too, speaking of the inexperienced thing, you know, Robert Saleh is getting a lot of run for, you know, possibly being a head coaching candidate, something like that. Did the defense fall off in the second half largely because of those injuries and the lack of turnovers? Or did teams start to adjust more to what Saleh was doing? And if that's the case, then what? You know, then does Minnesota have a better game plan here following the blueprint from other teams? I don't necessarily know the answer to that. Somebody smarter than me might. But again, that's maybe something that we see that we can take advantage of from a live betting standpoint.
That's the wave of the future, buddy. I mean, I mean, we're in the divisional round now. I mean, in theory, these sides in total should be relatively sharp at this point in the season. I mean, if you're looking for anything, prop market, in-game stuff, I mean, if you really want to have a chance to make quite a bit of money, I mean, that's just where we're going here, where the true value is going to be at, unless you're betting openers against a single book.
Well, and one other thing that I heard over on the Matchbook podcast, and those guys do a phenomenal job. It's something I listen to every week. I have no problem giving props to, you know, other places that are doing fine work, and the Matchbook NFL podcast is a really good one. But one of the things that was mentioned on that, and this will be the last point we make on this game here, and something that could be relevant to the total, the playing surface at Levi's Stadium is generally not good. I mean, it's just not great at all. Minnesota had a very good playing surface in the Superdome last week. Does that have an impact here? In particular, with Thielen already being dinged up with the ankle, Cook, you know, his was an upper body injury, but, you know, still the playing surface is going to be a lot different here for this game than it was last week. Does that benefit San Francisco? Does that benefit the under? You know, again, at this time of the year, like you said, side and total should generally be as sharp as they're going to be. So you've got to look at maybe some of these things on the margin, something that's maybe a little bit more intangible. Maybe the playing surface kind of creeps up in this game too. Who knows?
Kirk Cousins and Minnesota under grass under him, 2-7-1 against the number. Ooh. So traditionally not good under grass under Cousins at Minnesota, 2-7-1 ATS.
I mean, Cousins isn't going to make explosive plays with his arm. His explosive plays come from yards after the catch. So if that is limited for Minnesota in this game, you know, just another handicapping angle, another factor that you want to keep, you know, as part of the equation here in this one. How about game 303-304, the first of the two AFC games here? Tennessee and Baltimore. Baltimore 9.5 or 10, painted across the offshore market. Total 46.5 to 47. Down from the opener of 48, which is kind of surprising here given the offensive efficiency of these two teams in the second half of the year.
Agree, but I think it's the right side. I mean, there's a little bit of weather here, wind and rain a little bit. Maybe not as much rain, but there's some wind in the forecast here. So that might be one reason why the under is getting a little bit of play. I think another reason is, you know, I obviously got two very run-heavy type of teams. Although, I mean, Baltimore's run-heavy, and they led the NFL in scoring this year. I just think if Tennessee's going to have a chance, what's the game plan? Well, let's run Derrick Henry, which they've done. Obviously, the last couple of weeks, the tune of, what, like 66 carries for him. He hasn't had back-to-back 30-plus carries in his career going all the way back to his senior or his junior year in Alabama, where he just had it one time. It was at the end of the regular season his junior year where he won the Heisman Trophy at Alabama. I expect him to get a lot of carries. If you look at Tennessee's passing attempts, it's looked like they've tried to protect Ryan Tannehill here down the stretch, certainly did last week. And didn't necessarily need them. They went in and won in New England. I just think I expect Derrick Henry to get his carries. What I have to question is how effective Derrick Henry is going to be, you know, trying to go a third straight week here. I'm on the under here. Again, I'm not particularly if I had to play a side, it'd probably be Baltimore. I mean, how could you fade a team at this point that's been just historically great? I mean, last 10 games, they're covering by an average of 15 points per game. And this might be a scenario where the market just can't catch up fast enough to Baltimore this season. I mean, you got a generational type of talent that we've never seen before in Lamar Jackson. Maybe, you know, we just don't see a market catch up with Baltimore fast enough. So I'd probably lean Baltimore, prefer the under.
I think what I'm hoping for here, I'm kind of hoping for an opportunity to play Baltimore's second half in this game. Maybe hope that they come out a little bit slow, a little bit rusty, because again, not just the bye last week, but Lamar Jackson and company didn't play in week 17 either. So they've got to come off the shelf with a couple of weeks of rust as opposed to, you know, a team like San Francisco or Kansas City where, you know, they actually had to play in week 17. So
yeah,
there is that factor that concerns me a little bit for Baltimore. And again, that would be concerning with a high number on this game of 9.5 or 10. The thing about it for me is that, like you said, I mean, Baltimore's been historically good. John Harbaugh is one of the best coaches in the NFL, and he actually understands game theory. And, man, we saw that play out a ton last week with guys just making incorrect decisions in fourth down, managing timeouts, all that type of stuff. Baltimore has the coaching advantage here, and I think that could come into play later in the game as well. My hope is to get a cheaper price on Baltimore's second half. If I had to play it full game, like you, I'm looking at Baltimore. I just have to respect what they've done. And Tennessee, again, Tennessee goes on the road. to Foxborough, beats New England. We got some later sharp money on New England. They're just kind of saying, okay, you know, it's Belichick and Brady at home in the playoffs, so on and so forth. Do you see any respect going Tennessee's way for beating New England in this number? The answer is no, and there's a reason for that.
Good point. Or just New England's just, that's not, obviously it's not the New England of the last 10, 15 years. So, I mean, Brady just, it's obviously that he could hit the wall, and obviously weapons-wise at the skill positions and whatnot offensively, they're just nowhere near what they've been. Not that they've ever been overly great, you know, outside of Randy Moss and you know, tight end there. So I agree that Tennessee's not getting overabundance of respect here with this line where it's at after a big win for the Titans last week. It's let me ask you this, because I've heard conflicting, you know, stuff on it, but I got an idea where you'll go. What was your thought process on Vrabel deciding to punt there with like four or five minutes left in the game?
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, I guess it's one of those things where he wanted New England to beat him. You know, he wanted Brady to go down the field with a long field. And, you know, again, I mean, that's something that I talked about all throughout the season. New England was stunningly good in turnover margin, and for most of the year, they were like 15th in points per drive. So they had a bunch of short fields. They had the best average starting field position in the NFL, and they were still 15th in points per drive. I mean, hey, if you want to make Tom Brady's offense beat you with the lack of skill position guys that he has, I guess it makes some sense. You know, I mean,
that makes sense when you saw him, you know, run 2 minutes off the clock. Because, I mean, the analytics guys were just killing Vrabel. I get it. I mean, I guess you go for it. But isn't one thing I don't think the analytics get sometimes, time and place, game flow. I mean, it's 14-13. Neither team scored in the second half. I mean, I get it. The analytics say go for it there, try to end the game. But we haven't seen New England do anything in an entire half. I mean, you really think they're going to, you know, go, you know, 60, 70 yards and line up for field goal when they've had question marks at field goal this season? I don't know. I mean, it's not the same New England. Again, offense, not the same Tom Brady the last 10, 15 years. When you saw him milk another 2 minutes off the clock, I didn't have a problem with the decision.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really didn't either. And like you said, it's you know, sometimes it can be situational, you know, and that's one of the things that I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole. I talk about it all the time on my baseball podcast, but I am a sabermetrics guy. And something that bothers me is that some people are black and white. The data says absolutely do this. And I get it. And by and large, I'm going to agree with the data and the analytics side more often than not. But in that situation against that team in, you know, those conditions with Brady having no weapons, there is more gray area than what is presented by the actual data. So while I, you know, blast coaches all the time, while I blast managers for sacrifice bunting and this and that, you know, if you've got a right-handed batter up there against somebody who absolutely dominates righties, it may be too early to bunt, but it may not be the worst decision in the world. It is kind of a, not a coin flip all the way, but it's a gray area. If it's purely black and white, like Sean Payton's timeout usage, that's one thing. If it's Vrabel deciding to punt, that's another. So I'm not hardline analytics anything. I think in that situation against that opponent with what you know about that opponent, it didn't bother me.
Fair. And boy, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but I mean, how many World Series titles do the A's have, Dodgers have? Aren't they like two of the teams that are purely black and white analytics?
To a degree. Yeah, I mean, to a degree. Also, you know, you've got an Oakland team that operates at such a massive payroll deficiency.
Yeah,
that,
I know.
You know, there are some extenuating circumstances there with that. But, you know, I mean, let's see what happens with Baltimore. You know, I mean, Harbaugh is very in tune with game management. Let's see what they do against Kansas City next week. Let's see what they do if they get to the Super Bowl. You know, and we'll see if some of those decisions do kind of, you know, wind up coming to the forefront here and may ultimately decide, you know, not just the conference champions, but maybe the Super Bowl champions as well. Game 305-306 is Houston and Kansas City. Chiefs anywhere from 9.5 or 10 across the market, mostly 9.5. Total up from 49 to 51. That's probably my strongest opinion of the weekend. What's your take on the game?
I'll lay it with Kansas City. I mean, Deshaun Watson not giving up and coming from behind is certainly a concern, but I got Andy Reid off a bye. He's exceeded expectations, that being the Vegas line, the spread, by 5.5 points per game. It was 5.5 at Philadelphia in his career. It's been 5.5 at Kansas City off a bye. I think Kansas City might beat. I mean, I'd still probably have Baltimore 1 right now if I really did power rankings like I did college football. But Kansas, I mean, I think Kansas City's better than what they were a year ago. They certainly are defensively. I mean, last six games, they're only allowing, you know, about 11.5 points per game. That would rank number 1 in the NFL. And last year, keep in mind, you know, even the advanced analytics said that they had a bottom 5, bottom 6 type of defense a year ago. Mahomes is healthy. He wasn't healthy. Obviously missed a couple games. Those are factored in the full season stats. They missed a couple of games, and that's factored in. Bill O'Brien, when he's catching 7 or more, has, you know, come up short of expectations by about 8.5 points per game. I just think Kansas City is clearly the superior team. Read off a bye. I'm going to lay it here, and I usually don't do it.
Yeah, I like Kansas City a lot here in this game, too. I mean, you've got a coaching advantage. You've got a Houston defense that's terrible. They were dead last in the league in yards per play allowed. Kansas City should have a field day offensively. And again, a trend that Ralph Michaels tweeted out earlier on in the season here, Andy Reid at the time, 22-4-1 to the under off a bye. Well, they beat Oakland. They won that game 40-9. They held Oakland to 9 points. They had averaged 15 points against per game with Andy Reid off of a bye with both the Chiefs and the Eagles. If the total's 51 and we're getting a high scoring game and Andy Reid's going to be prepared for Houston, who's scoring all the points? The answer is Kansas City.
Yeah.
This thing should be a blowout, I think. I really do feel that way.
They had no problem blowing out Indianapolis, so an Indianapolis team that I really liked last year in the divisional round. Deshaun Watson's the only X factor that scares me. I mean, I have so much respect for him, and there is no quit there. But, yeah, I think this is on paper a mismatch. And the only fact it's not double digits, I mean, let's, you know, keep it real. Houston did win at KC earlier this year as a 4-point dog in that game. But, again, Kansas City's a much different team. Mahomes played, but he wasn't 100% in that one. And Kansas City's defense, certainly not the same as what it was early in the season. So full agreement with me, buddy. KC, no question, is my favorite side play of the divisional round.
Yeah, mine too. I mean, let's see if Will Fuller is able to go. Maybe that'll kind of do something to the line, maybe do something to the total here in this one too. But to circle back to something you mentioned here, I think I said it, 4 weeks ago on the show that Kansas City would win at Baltimore in the AFC Championship game. So I'm not going to back off of that because exactly what you said, people don't realize how vastly improved this defense is from last year. I mean, they were top 10 in adjusted net yards per pass attempt allowed this season. They were nowhere near that last year. I know they still struggle a little bit to defend the run, and that would be a problem against Baltimore, but I would give Kansas City one hell of a chance.
Hold on. You had Kansas City over Baltimore in the AFC Championship game?
Yeah, like 4 weeks ago. I mentioned it on the show.
Okay. Never mind. I was thinking something dumb. I was thinking, it was like, how'd you have KC as a 2 seed with New England losing outright in the final week of the season, but you had Kansas City beating New England and then beating Baltimore, both on the road, right?
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
I'm a believer in this Kansas City team. I really am.
I'm going to be on KC next. I mean, obviously, we'll see injury
what's the
situation.
Number?
Yeah, ooh, that's a good call. 4.5.
Okay.
Maybe 4.
Here's the thing, right? I mean, if Baltimore trucks Tennessee and Kansas City blows away Houston like they should, I mean, which team gets more respect? It has to be Baltimore, right? Because Tennessee is better than Houston in the minds of a lot of people. So,
no, I think they're about equal. I mean, both those lines were right around 3. Never mind. When Houston played Tennessee, when both teams were trying, it was 3, right? At Tennessee. Get it. Tennessee. I mean, Houston went in when both teams were trying. Houston went into Tennessee and won. I mean, the final week, obviously, Houston didn't care, and Tennessee was a but, you know, recency bias. I mean, they might think, oh, Tennessee just crushed Houston. So,
yeah,
I'm not sure.
I think 4 or 4.5 are good.
Yeah, I think so. I'd be willing to bet anybody would be 4 or 4.5.
Total what? Low 50s?
Yeah. Oh, certainly. Certainly.
51.5,
52? Yeah, 51.5, 52. Weather, I mean, you always got to worry about weather, but that sounds about right. What a hell of an AFC championship game. First one, what about it? Almost feels like a decade without New England, and I'd still be relatively really pumped about it.
Oh, I'd be fired up about it. I would be thrilled to see either Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. I think that would be awesome.
Absolutely.
And especially these two offenses, you know, Reed and the offense that Greg Roman and Harbaugh have put together. I mean, that'd be fun. That'd be great from a player prop standpoint, too, for the Super Bowl. I think there'd be a lot of opportunities to take advantage of some things there. In any event, 307-308, Seattle and Green Bay, the last game here of the divisional round. Starting to see some 4.5 showing up out there in the market on Green Bay. 4 with extra juice, kind of the predominant number. Total of 47 on this one. What do you think?
I think that both teams are overrated. I wish they weren't playing each other. You know, both, I mean, you got Green Bay and Seattle both are outgamed on the season. That's incredible. It's only happened in the divisional round where you have a matchup with two teams that have been outgamed on the season. It's only happened one other time this century. It was like a pitiful Seattle-Chicago Bears divisional game from several years ago. I'm going to lean under in this one. Early forecast doesn't have like snow or anything, but certainly very cold there. Under's been the play for Green Bay last 8 games, 7-1. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is the elite quarterback that he used to be. They rely on him to make, you know, elite throw maybe once or twice a game, but you know, on a consistent game in and game out basis, he's just not what he was 3-4 years ago. Russell Wilson doesn't have, you know, with the running back injury concerns, I worry about the effectiveness of the run game for Seattle. I don't want to take a big position on the side. I mean, 4.5 sounds about right to me. As far as the side goes, under for me, just a lean. I'm not going to be involved too heavily pre-flop in these divisional games.
No, I'm certainly not going to be involved in this one. I mean, I like the under 47 like you. I don't like either side. Like you said, these are both fade teams. And quite frankly, I'm not the least bit surprised if both Minnesota and San Francisco, you know, would be able to beat these two teams next week. And I know Minnesota had to play 3 straight road games and all that, but
I've seen it before.
Yeah, right. And I just don't think either one of these teams are very good. I just don't. And the thing about Green Bay, the reason I would lean the Green Bay side and maybe take a live position if I get an opportunity to get a better number, they have a running game. Aaron Jones can run the football. Aaron Rodgers is not the explosive player he used to be. Unless he's throwing it to Davante Adams, they don't get big plays in the passing game. So the fact that Green Bay can run it with Jones and you still have to concern yourself with Aaron Rodgers and that aura and that perception, I think that gives Green Bay a slight edge. But again, if Jones is the focal point of the offensive game plan, why not take the under? So I don't like either one of these teams. I haven't all year. I just hope both of them, I just hope that whichever team wins that game loses next week because I don't want to see either one of them in the Super Bowl. No offense to Seahawks or Packers fans.
Why not? You can lay with the AFC. KC, Baltimore, lay it. 3-4 points in the Super Bowl. Why not?
Yeah, that's true. I would, I mean, I guess I'd have to, I don't know. I guess I'd hope for San Francisco.
I think San Francisco's kind of overrated. I know you're a big Shanahan guy, but I'll say this. I'm looking to play the AFC. I'm looking to play KC Baltimore in the Super Bowl. Let's just put it that way for me.
No, that's fair. And then there's got to be some look-ahead lines out there, right, where you can take the AFC? There's got to be. So
yeah, it's getting up there, though, now. It's like 3. You could have bet 3, I think, last week. I think it's higher now. I'll have to look. But, I think it's in the 4 range now.
Because the Saints are gone, and they were actually probably the second most, maybe the most dangerous team in the NFL.
I agree with that.
So, yeah, it's we'll see. We'll see what happens here with these games. And, again, looking forward to probably Baltimore and Kansas City in that AFC Championship game. And then, you know what, any combination in the NFC Championship game wouldn't surprise me a whole lot here when we reconvene on next Thursday's show. Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at bradpowerssports.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
A couple of different things. I mean, obviously, newsletter that I talk about each and every week. You can get that available, that special pricing I was offering the last couple of weeks. Unfortunately, a little too late for that, but you still want to renew for the upcoming season. And you get the rest of this season at $79 for that. You get all the way through the Super Bowl and then all of next season, college football, the NFL. Game wraps on every single football game played, whether it's college football or the NFL. 56% is the record. 5 years, we're talking a sample size, about 850 picks. Not too shabby there. Basketball is going to heat up for me starting this Saturday. And the Hoops records, for I don't have a newsletter when it comes to Hoops. It's daily, what I call VIP emails that you get each and every day. That starts officially on Saturday. You can check that out at bradpowersports.com, and that's pretty much it.
What are you doing for the college prop picks that you pick out? Are you just posting them on Twitter? Are you going to send out emails?
The guys that sign up with me, VIP, I'll probably post a couple on Twitter and whatnot. I mean, it just depends. I mean, I'm kind of waiting to see what the market looks like. I mean, I hate to be selfish, but I am. I want to bet some stuff first. But yeah, I'll post and give out anything when it comes to prop markets. I expect maybe have 3 to 5 prop bets, depending on how much comes out.
Well, again, make sure you follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Always great content over there. And of course, bradpowersports.com is the website. Brad, appreciate your time as always, man. Always fun to chat with you. Always good to have the back and forth. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good, man. Thanks for having me on.
There you go. There's Brad Powers, professional handicapper, over at bradpowersports.com and at Brad Powers and the number 7 on Twitter. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, still working on my first guest. I've got a pretty good idea of who it's going to be, but I don't want to guarantee anything here yet. But just know that if we get him on the show, it should be a very, very good segment on the national championship game tomorrow. But then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. We'll talk about sharp money for the national championship game and also this round of the NFL playoffs. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.